West of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
That's who we are. Good morning, everybody. Wasn't that quite something? The following facts from Bill in Fairfield, California should sum it up. Art. Any object traveling in the Earth's atmosphere at an estimated velocity of 17,000 miles an hour, or less, is going to be tracked by one of the major agencies. The reason why these agencies, JPL, NASA, and so forth, want the footage is evident. The object was tracked, verified, is real, and may be of interest to the current back engineering efforts. The video offers an unusual insight with regard to the thermal dynamics of these objects. Bill in Fairfield, California. We're going to open line shortly, and we've got a lot to talk about. I want to remind my audience we've got a change in scheduling for this Sunday's Dreamland with Linda Moulton Howe. We will have Colonel Philip Corso, who wrote The Day After Roswell, which is the $64 million interview. And we've lined it up. It'll be this Sunday on Dreamland. And this Friday night, Saturday morning, Beyond Roswell by Michael Hessman. Michael Hessman will be my guest. He'll be here along with so many others who have written significant works on Roswell. You know, that event that didn't occur until at least 1953 with time compression. And I've got an additional bulletin that I'm going to reread on Roswell and something on Mars for 1050. Find out how it can be part of your IRA or retirement account. It's opportunity knocking again. Don't miss it. Tell them Art Bell told you to call 1-800-444-1050. You remember the other day I reported a dust storm forming on Mars that would affect the landing site or may affect the landing site for the Mars Pathfinder mission? Well, I got a million faxes saying, baloney, it's not in the news, we can't find it. Baloney, there is no storm. Oh, yes, there is. From Bob in Honolulu, Art, did you hear the news on Mars? Now they're coming out with a story on the news that a dust storm has formed and is moving directly toward the Pathfinder landing zone. They say the storm could cause or possibly build to a point where it would cover the entire planet. Doesn't this sound like a build-up toward a delayed landing, as Richard Hoagland had predicted? In fact, here is a Reuters story that just cleared. Let me read a portion of it to you. An unexpected large dust storm on Mars is moving toward the July 4th landing site of NASA's unmanned Pathfinder spacecraft. The dust storm is filling the Valles Marineris Canyon system, a series of 3 to 5 mile deep canyons stretching for 1,800 miles and coming to within 600 miles of the Pathfinder landing site. Unless the dust storm evolves into a massive global event, its effects on Pathfinder should be minimal, according to Steve Lee of the Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics of the University of Colorado at Boulder. Quote, this is something we did not expect to see. It's very early in the Martian year for major dust storms to occur, he said. It could go away tomorrow, stay for weeks, or turn into a global dust storm. We have not seen a storm like this before, so we just don't know. And that's from Reuters, ladies and gentlemen. So nobody right now is saying this will delay or stop the or divert the Pathfinder mission. But just so you know that I was not tinkering about in areas of speculation the other day, The dust storm on Mars is real and apparently is threatening. You know, take that and do what you will with it. In addition, I want to reread this because this apparently is going to be the big news to come from Roswell. I was really expecting something exactly like this. Dateline Roswell. A press conference scheduled for 9 a.m. July 4th, 1997 at the Ryerson Auditorium on the New Mexico Military Institute campus in Roswell, New Mexico, is to present the results of scientific tests performed on crash debris found near Roswell, New Mexico 50 years ago that, this says, once and for all, will prove the downed vehicle was not of Earth origin. A research scientist from a major university involved in the testing is going to be on hand to discuss the methodology and the results of the isotopic ratio tests of the Roswell debris. Isotopic radio tests of Roswell. Now, supporting conclusions and a battery of tests conducted by universities and national labs will be provided that conclude, listen now, the Roswell debris is manufactured material of extraterrestrial origin. Paul Davids, executive producer of the Showtime film Roswell, is sponsoring the presentation of this evidence during his program at the 50th anniversary, along with images of the actual Roswell crash debris. The chain of evidence will also be presented, validating the Roswell incident as the recovery of a crashed extraterrestrial vehicle. That's a news release I got about an hour and a half ago. Paul, if you're out there, send me a fax. Paul Davids, send me a fax, and we'll get you on the air very quickly and let you elaborate on this if you would like to, Paul. I know you're out there somewhere. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hold on a sec. I'm getting an echo for some reason. Let me try this again.
Okay.
All right, there we go. That's a little better.
Okay. I wanted to tell you I'm very honored to talk to you, and it's nice to talk to someone who has as much integrity that you do, and I also wanted to, I hope Mr. Lamphere is listening. He has a lot of integrity and honesty, and that's great. But the reason I called, it's amazing the people that are trying to get a hold of him.
Yes.
And it's also amazing that the government says, oh, gee, we don't have a Star Wars program anymore. It's gone. You know, it's defunct. And all of a sudden they're getting a hold of him.
Yeah, and we don't investigate that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And we inquire about it.
But isn't that something?
Apparently you've got to say just the right words these days. It's like time compression.
Uh-huh. But it's, I thought it was awfully funny that, you know, oh, we don't have a Star Wars program anymore, but now they're trying to get a hold of him?
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with this picture?
Everything's wrong with the whole picture on all of this right now.
Oh, isn't it something?
This is a very big announcement. If, in fact, they have done isotopic tests, ratio tests, and this material is not of Earth origin, then they really got a gotcha here.
Oh, isn't it wonderful?
Yes.
I think it's great. But I wanted to, you know, just let him know that it's nice to hear someone who has that much honesty and integrity in their life.
Yes.
And it's very nice, and I'm very honored to talk to you, too, also.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. That's why I had Land back. Obviously, what he's got is very anomalous. And he's being very careful in how he's dealing with this. And putting the AVI file up, I think, is a very generous, credible thing to do. So to get to his site, you can go to my site, www.artbell.com. And in the guest section, even in the new section, you will see a link to the Windchaser website. On my international line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hello, Art. It's Catherine calling from Vancouver.
How you doing?
Good, very good. So I have a playful explanation for this UFO in the storm.
Yes.
I'm a whitewater inner tuber, and maybe this is ET getting their thrills.
Well, it would be a thrill going into the center of a storm that has a tornado. No question about that. Very thrilling.
Really? What a thought, eh?
Yes.
Imagine diving into something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
All right. Well, thank you very much for saying it. Have a good morning. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Let me turn my radio down.
Thank you. Always do that,
yes,
right away.
My name's John. I'm in Sacramento.
Yes, John.
And I happen to be the original provider on the STS-80 footage.
Oh? Really?
I'm a close friend of Bill Hamilton's.
Oh, really? All right, then I have a copy of the STS-80 footage. We had a report from Linda Howe. Did you hear Dreamland this last Sunday?
I listened to parts of it, yep.
Parts of it. Did you hear the part of it that related to the report from Australia?
Yes, I did. You have to refresh my memory, but I found it very interesting talking about the range there. They have the Woomera range out there in,
yes,
northern Australia.
Yes, and they believe there are electromagnetic pulsing devices there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, indeed, would you confirm for the audience what I have told them? At one point in the STS video, 80, it's obvious the ground controllers zoom in on what appears to be an Australian city. And they just hold there, waiting and waiting and waiting. They had not zoomed in on anything like that previously, but they zoomed in on an Australian city, and then suddenly, describe for them what happens.
Yeah, well, I think what happened is Hoagland's got an original footage that includes footage that I didn't get.
Oh, you don't have it.
And, well, I don't have all of the footage, no. I got the STS-80 on December 1st at 5 minutes to 12 Pacific Standard Time to about 25 after 12, which would have been December 2nd,
right,
Pacific Standard Time.
Oh, okay.
What I sent Bill on the clip was a control track that had the low-image night camera.
Yes.
From a previous mission day as a control tape to show what's typical. And then I put the STS-80 December 1st footage following that after control track break to show the non-typical anomalous content. But that didn't mean that I had all the footage for the whole mission, which I didn't.
Okay, well, a remarkable event is captured on tape. I've got it, so.
Yeah, I'm sitting here watching NASA Select right now on the current mission, and
right,
there's something that's very perplexing to me, which I wanted to bring up on the program.
What do you see?
Well, of course, December of 96 was STS-80. In between, we've had a few missions,
right,
that have had problems. The current mission on their Houston Control Center display is showing STS-94.
Huh.
And their mission control narrator is calling it Mission Control 94, STS-94, audibly on the voice track. You know, when he's announcing.
Yes.
And I can't figure out how we get up to 94 so fast.
I don't know.
I don't remember all those missions between December and now.
Well, this mission is a replacement mission, I believe, for a mission that was aborted because of a bad power cell.
That's correct. That's what they're saying. But their display on ground control, on their trajectory for the orbiter.
I don't know how we would get to 94.
Yeah, well, they're saying 94 on their narrator, and they're displaying STS-94 on their mission display board.
Well, maybe they launched a few things we didn't notice. Who knows?
I can't account for it, and I thought, well, maybe somebody's got a knowledge, and maybe Richard might have a knowledge. The curious thing to me that Richard's research on the actual position, because when they're going on this on the Earth views in the daylight or on the low light imaging camera, they're not telling you where they're at. There's no narrative usually.
Right.
So you're kind of in the dark as an individual watching this over exactly where you're at.
Well, Richard, with regard to the Australian city, did a great deal of research and narrowed it down to Australia. They know exactly now where they were and what they were looking at. And you have to see this. It is the most remarkable footage I have ever seen. Period.
I'd like to see it myself. I've got some of the other missions that Hamilton's furnished me.
I understand. I'm holding this right now with respect for Richard Hoagland. I would love to make an AVI file of it and upload it.
Mm-hmm.
And if he gives me permission, I will.
Yeah, I understand Tom King's Odney Chapter House has got 4 minutes of it on his homepage.
Does he?
Yes. Because when I sent the copy to Bill...
Is it of what I'm talking about?
No, it's of the STS-80.
Yeah, I know, of the Australian City.
But it's from the content that I sent.
Okay.
And it's a little confusing to me because Richard's been on your program and he says he got the original footage from NASA and he's determined that they were passing over the coast of Chile, over Santiago, Chile, on earlier programs. So apparently he's talking about other footage. And my understanding in listening to him, he was talking about the STS-80 on the footage that I originally sent Bill Hamilton. I also sent Jack Casher a Super VHS copy.
Okay, now this must be in addition to that.
Yeah, because he's talking two locations. One is, Australia, and one's the STS-80 footage that I provided was going over Santiago, Chile.
Okay, the latest, pinpointed it as, and I can't remember, he said it may have been Melbourne or Perth, I can't recall, but they did pinpoint it to an Australian city.
Yeah, well, this is one of the few times I've ever been sitting here going expletive deleted at my own television set. is when I was watching this, and it's just as sensational as you described to the listeners. And I know that they've shown freeze frames in Alien Encounter magazine in England. And I'm waiting for the results. So hopefully, Tom Delatoso's gotten a copy. I know.
You mean Jim?
Jim Delatoso, yeah. Bill's provided him with a copy, and of course he provides it to Tom King, and I sent a copy to Jack Casher on Bill Hamilton's request.
Well, I'm beginning to see a pattern here, a big pattern, with what's seen on the 48 video, the 80 video, the kind of thing that Lan Lamphere talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You beginning to see a pattern yourself?
Well, this is one of the reasons I called when I was listening to Lan Lamphere earlier, talking about the velocity of the object that
yes.
he recorded. He said, well, I don't know of any object that could travel at that velocity without effects at ground level.
Sure.
He says, I do know of one aircraft that we have that can travel at that speed, but higher up in the atmosphere.
Yes.
However, he didn't elaborate on what he was talking about.
Well, it would have been the space shuttle at that kind of speed.
Yeah, it would seem so, except for the space shuttle is out of the atmosphere.
That's true. All right. Well, listen, hold on a moment. We'll get right back to you. This is CBC Breakdown.
On the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Once again, here I am. Back to my caller on hold from Ron in Birmingham, Alabama. Dear Art, looking at a list of scheduled shuttle launches for 1997. According to it, the current mission ought to be STS-84, not 94. Hello?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, well, that's what I assumed. I expected to see 84 myself.
So they may just have a digit incorrect, and, of course, they just blather on and repeat whatever they see that is incorrect.
Well, you know, I talked with a friend of mine about this before calling you earlier this evening, and, you know, we went over the thing like the worksheets that they are distributing as you watch them.
Yes.
Their timetables and everything else, they all have the mission nomenclature, identifier, and everything on it, and how they could get it up there and say 94s, and then orally announce it as STS-94, along with that other thing on the display board, is kind of a mystery to me.
Just one answer for it, sir.
Yes.
Time compression.
Time compression, yes. Mind compression. Yes.
All right.
I had some things I'd like to mention in behalf of Richard Hoagland's research.
Yes.
And one of the things that I'm interested in telling them about is to look at the works of an author, H.S. Bellamy and P. Allen.
All right. That would be something to tell him directly, sir. Thank you very much for the call. And again, the headline is Dust Storm Menaces Mars Probe Landing Site. And I had this news on the other day, and people sent me very derisive faxes, an email, and said, what a bunch of baloney.
We haven't heard that on the news.
It can't be true. It's not on the news. Trust me, it's true. It doesn't mean they're not going to land, but the headline is, I read again, Dust Storm Menaces Mars Probe Landing Site. Believe it or not, it's 9. Well, when you think about it, that's too good a deal to turn down. In other words, they guarantee the lowest price in America on web TV, period. The lowest price, period. They will actually beat the lowest price you can find by 5%. Why would you buy anywhere else? Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Mary in Rochester, New York. They just announced over the radio that starting next week you're going to be on for the full 5 hours.
That's right. And what they're going to do is move us from WHAM to, and I'm sorry, I don't have the call letters.
W-H-E-T?
Say it again?
W-H-E-T?
That might be right.
Yeah, it's the other station.
It's the other station, a big one.
Yes.
And they're going to carry the full 5 hour program. Yes.
Oh, hallelujah. Oh, I'll be so glad to hear you. Most interesting, but I did have to call you and say, wonderful.
Well, I'm glad you're happy. I just heard about that myself today or yesterday.
And you know, after the broadcast about Roswell?
Yes.
Before that, I was a skeptic. Now I know that there's something out there that, you know, they aren't telling us.
Well, I kind of feel the same way. I mean, it was so ridiculous that it was almost designed to make people believe.
Well, you know, beforehand, I was an iffy. Now I know it was true. And then after your announcement there, that even more makes me feel that this is all very true.
Well, if they have, thank you, if they have materials... there is no question about this. If they have materials that indicate they have manufactured item in debris, which shows isotopic tests that absolutely prove this is not terrestrial material, that it is not of Earth, then they've got the smoking gun. And time compression or not, my friend... They've got the smoking gun, and it's going to be announced at 9 a.m. July 4th in Roswell. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Art Bell?
Yes.
Oh, this is Bob from Tacoma, Washington.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Okay.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
The guy that was on tonight was really kind of interesting in so much as, you know, he just didn't display any ego whatsoever. I thought that was kind of unique. But the reason I'm calling, we're about the same age. And do you remember a show called You Asked For It?
Sure.
Do you?
Of course.
Do you remember seeing it in the early 50s?
Yes.
On that show, they had like 7 flying saucers going over Mount Rainier.
I'm not sure I remember that. I certainly remember You Asked For It.
Anyway, what they had is they had the gun film out of F-85s, you know, tailing these flying saucers across Mount Rainier.
Okay.
Anyway, and if I remember right, I think I saw it on that show at least 4 times when people would write in to see it over and over and over.
Hmm.
It's kind of interesting. Nobody's ever brought this up.
I vaguely recall something about objects over Rainier, and I certainly recall the TV show. I just don't put them both together.
Well, I think if somebody would try to get back in the archives of that show, you know, you'd have something there that you're looking for.
All right. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Sure, I remember You Asked For It. Dates me. I am 52 years old, and I recall that show well. I watched it faithfully every week, as we all did, with a lot of other shows. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
KQMS, Redding, California.
Morning.
I'm sorry I called you pointy-headed yesterday.
That's okay. I've been called much worse.
Well, actually, I insinuated it.
That's all right. I have a very thick skin.
Well, it's not polite for me to take advantage of that.
It's all right.
I have two comments. My first comment is, like, when they invented the microscope, didn't that really change how we looked at everything? Something in the past, I know, something. The telescope, the microscope, some kind of scientific analysis tool.
With regard to what?
Well, actually, with regard to our view of life, the universe, and everything. You know, because, like, if there's dust storms and wind on Mars, isn't there atmosphere?
Yes.
Well, you know, how come, you know, they still teach you in school, I'm not that long out of school, you know, that Mars is just a lump out there.
Well, a lump. That's not quite fair. No, there is an atmosphere on Mars. Not much of one, but
it
there
looks
is
like a bunch of rocks is all it looks like to
well,
me.
Yeah,
well,
but
I'm entitled to my opinion. Well, I think that people need to realize that we're having a part of the quickening is our totally changing technology. We're having such vast amounts of information that our view of life, the universe, and everything is changing quickly.
Yes.
My second point. Have you ever seen, like, I think the word is the electron microscope, or it's whatever microscope that shows those little bugs that live in your eyelashes?
Bugs that live in your eyelashes. I know what an electron microscope is. We've got several photographs of implants and that sort of thing up on the website taken
by an
electron.
Have you ever seen the little bugs that live in your eyelashes?
No, and I don't want to either.
Well, they do. They live in everybody's. Now think about this. We are their planet.
That's right.
So what if we wanted to talk to them?
They would take us away and put us in a special room.
No. I mean, seriously, what if we wanted to talk to them? Our size is one thing that stands in the way of speaking to them.
Well, they probably hear us. I mean, I consider...
Well, how do you know that?
Well, because our voice is close, and so if they can hear anything, we would appear to be a giant thunderclap to them every time we open our mouths.
Okay, but if they would interpret it differently then, right? What if we wanted to speak to them? First of all, they're different life forms, so we'd have to understand their language and culture, so we'd have to look at that, right?
Eyelash bugs, yeah.
Okay, but how would we communicate with them?
With Mike Tyson, I don't know.
Listen, what if extraterrestrials are that big?
Well, it's as possible as anything else. I understand what you're talking about. Worlds within worlds.
Well, I know, but think about it. What? See, because, like, I've, like, spoken to the Earth, and the first time she tried to talk to me, she was so big that, I think I, like, fainted. I mean, I've never felt anything so big in my whole entire life. It really scared me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want her to talk to me anymore.
So, to her, you are but an eyelash bug.
That's right.
I think I get the picture. Thank you very much, eyelash bugs. I really don't want to see an eyelash bug. I'm sure they exist. Just as in high school, you recall in biology, you looked at pond scum or even water that comes from the tap. And the things that crawl in there, available to be seen under a common microscope, you don't want to see. Because after you do, you don't want to drink water. So it's better not to see them. They are there, though. Should we try to talk to them? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Kent from Ankeny, Iowa.
Yes.
I was just wondering, any more information on Mel's Hole? Have you ever heard anything more about it?
Not particularly. People ask me that all the time. Strange Universe reran the show on it here the other day.
Yeah.
And no, as far as I know, Mel is sipping martinis somewhere in Australia.
Oh, probably having fun.
Probably.
I have no idea if, you know, it's true or not, but certainly it's possible. And the reason I say that is there's a town in Pennsylvania called Centrella, and back in 87... my grandfather died, and so our family, we went to Centralia, which was his boyhood hometown, and they had a sinkhole where they had dropped, I don't remember the exact number, I think it was two boxcars into the sinkhole.
Really?
And they never heard it hit bottom. So, I mean, it's certainly possible.
Oh, yes.
But, I mean, that's far. I was also wondering about J.C. Have you ever talked to him since?
No, J.C. has not called since. He called me when I had a guest on and was giving me a devil of a time, as usual. And
I missed it. Bummer.
Yeah. You know, so I think it's up on the website as a real audio file
okay.
if you have a computer.
Oh, yes, I do.
It's very entertaining.
I'll have to check that out.
J.C., where are you?
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. I'm sure we will hear in time from J.C. It's a matter of getting through. There's a lot of people out there. Mel's Hole. Mel's Hole. Ha, ha, ha. Every now and then, I think of Mel. I think about Mel. Don't you? Here's something that chronicles Mel's saga.
Big Hole for sale or rent, with 80,000 feet of monofilament. Art Bell thinks Mel is bent. Now here comes the government. He's got the movie right. Maybe write a book, cause you think he might be the man with the means to make green. He's king of the whole. Well, you know that guy is doing swell. Someone paid a pile of cash to purchase a well. If you haven't seen the mystery hole, it's cause Central tried to plug it with the power pole. Now it is understood, Mel sold the hole, and he's gone for good. He's lying in the sun, making all that money can sure be fun. So go out to your own backyard, grab a shovel, dig real hard. Now you've got the means to make green. You're the king of the hole.
Did you find the hole?
I would have if it wasn't for those meddling kids. With 80,000 feet of monofilament, I felt things smell is meant. Oh, he come to the government.
Hey, let's find out who Mel really is. It's old man Withers, the creepy amusement park attendant.
Well, that's it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Yeah, this is Rod from Illinois.
Hi, Rod.
Yeah, I was just wondering, where do you get a time compressor anyway?
The Air Force.
Oh, okay.
You have to get it from the Air Force. It's a regular issue item.
Okay, well, I'll have to call tomorrow. What I was calling for is when...
Would you turn the radio off?
Yeah, just did that.
Very important, yes.
When Hale Bopp was kind of leaving our skies and it was in the northwest...
Yes.
Me, my mom, and my best friend went out to see it, okay?
Right.
Because we have, like, trees and everything around us, and that was our clearest spot when it was
coming
down.
Sure.
And we was just, you know, goofing around looking with our binoculars and everything.
Yeah.
And I want to know if anybody else seen the little lights that was in the east and in the west sky. They were multicolored. They were not stars because they would fall and move back up and, like, move to the right and then right back to their original point. And they stayed there.
Yeah, that's an optical conclusion that occurs.
Okay.
You were seeing a star. And it happens frequently with Venus. It is misreported as moving. If you sit and stare at Venus, a very bright star, particularly when it's on the low to the horizon and there is a lot of atmosphere between you and outer space, Venus, as you stare at it, will actually begin to move up, down, sideways. Really, it's a bizarre optical conclusion. But I do believe firmly what you were seeing were stars. I have no way of knowing that for sure. I'm just telling you that that phenomenon does exist. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Turn off your radio.
Okay. This is Dorothy from Wilsonville, and I want to know if you know about the 6.5-hour coverage on PBS Friday. Starting at noon about the Pathfinder landing on Mars.
Well, there's all kinds of coverage planned, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, well, you probably heard, maybe you heard about it, and I wanted to remind you of it in case you... That particular broadcast is on public broadcast.
Oh, I will be glued to any coverage of the Pathfinder landing.
Yeah, that's what they say. Do we really believe they'll land on Mars? I kind of am skeptical about it.
Well, we did it before.
Yeah.
So, we're going to do it again. Maybe. Oh,
okay. All right.
All right. Thank you. Now, there's a lot that can go wrong. And now we have word. Again, I'll read the headline without going through the whole story. Dust storm menaces Mars probe landing site. This is an unusual, never before seen at this time of year, massive dust storm that could turn into a global event on Mars. Now, Pathfinder is not going to see much if it is enveloped in a dust storm, is it? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Mr. Bell.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
My name's Dave. David from Monroe, Louisiana.
Yes, sir.
I have some questions, and I've been bothered by that Roswell news report that the Air Force had put out.
Yes.
What I'm wondering about is they said that they dropped dummies in several instances or
yes,
whatever.
Correct.
Well, what kills me is what are the odds of those dummies landing in the same place that supposedly was the crash shot, you know, crash site. You know, if they dropped, they showed a picture of looked like the little flying saucer with the rocket spinning it around.
Yep.
But there weren't any dummies on that, supposedly, and he said when you put...
No, and the dummies they did drop came down in parachutes.
Right, but what are the odds of that?
I haven't heard any reports of aliens landing in parachutes.
Exactly true. Exactly right. And one other question. Have you heard anything about the... I'm 7 hours south of Jasper, Arkansas, where supposedly the school children were, like...
Oh, yes.
Sprayed or something like that.
Correct,
something.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Have you heard anything about that?
Anyway? Well, I was going to ask you. I mean, you're there.
Haven't heard a thing. Nothing in the papers. And I have a cousin who lives in Russellville, which is an hour and a half south. And there was never anything in the newspapers up there about it. Never, nothing. And they couldn't get any information.
Well, no. It's interesting that you would bring it up again. I have nothing to tell you, and as I said, I was hoping you would tell me.
Right. Well, if I had any information, I would, believe me, I would, you know, let you know.
All right.
And this is also the home of Jim Hossel. He's the shuttle commander of this mission that just went up.
Yes, sir. We'll all be watching.
Okay. Well, look, I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. As you know, Mir has more trouble. The oxygen generator, the brand new one, is at least temporarily out of commission. So they're having to light oxygen-burning wicks or candles. Very interesting that these wicks or candles, whatever they are, produce oxygen because conventional wisdom always suggested when you light a candle, it takes oxygen to burn. Now, obviously, these are specifically designed to emit oxygen. Somebody out there will know how it works. I don't. From the high desert, coming up on the top of the hour, this is CBC.
According to a recent study...
Richard Bell, toll-free, west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. 1-800-825-5033. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Actually, events generally, lately, have been taking my breath away. And I have this funny feeling that we're really in for an interesting month or two ahead. A really interesting month or two ahead. Sometimes that's the way events come on, almost like they're in slow motion. Top of the morning, everybody. 27. That's 1-800-557-4627. You've got nothing to lose but the facts. Well, this is an interesting facts that I've got here. Hi, Art. Just wanted to tell you what a great show you have tonight with regard to the STS-80 video and the anomalous object caught on the Storm Chasers video. Wanted to let you know I'm an ex-NASA contractor, and STS-80 was the last mission I worked. I worked in Johnson TV control room as a television engineering technician at Johnson Space Center here in Houston. I worked a lot of missions and have watched hundreds of hours of live downlink video from the orbiter. I did digital color correction on the video as it came down before it was disseminated to NASA TV and over to Mission Control. We made duplication of all the downlinked video and audio onto broadcast quality masters for various NASA customers and archival purposes. I got laid off due to a reduction of force in January, and I will check and see if I have any additional footage on that mission. If you have any questions about NASA and its handling of video, feel free to contact me. I was with the Television System Service Contract at Johnson Space Center since 1990, and I worked a lot of missions. Would you please withhold my name if you mention my facts? Yes, I will. He supplies me with telephone numbers and all the pertinent data to get hold of him. So you bet I will, my friend. Thank you, and we will follow up. On my international line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. My name is Scott, and I'm calling from Coquitlam, British Columbia, and I'm just trying to get away from my wife's bedroom so I don't wake her up.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
I'm calling about, I was listening to the NASA Select broadcast of the news conference that talked about Pathfinder. And I think you're reading much more into this dust storm than you should.
Well, actually, all I'm doing is reading released news story by Reuters.
Reuters neglects to mention quite a bit of information. They went on to state that the dust condition would be no worse than that which you would see on a smoggy day in Los Angeles. You'll have obscured long-range vision, but the close-up vision through the camera would be fine, just like you were driving down the highway.
Well, let me mention something to you, okay?
Pardon me?
Let me mention something to you, okay?
Okay.
I just got a call from Richard Hoagland, who is now at a location here in the West. And he said that typically dust storms, big ones, on Mars, reach speeds of about 300 miles per hour.
Well, they also said that they've had this experience with this sort of phenomenon in the past with Viking.
Yes, but if you've looked at how this object, sir, how Pathfinder is going to land, it's a big bouncing ball, roughly. It's got a lot of padding on it. It's designed to come down and then sort of hit hard and bounce. You know that, right?
And it's made with a material stronger than Teflon.
Yes, but if it were to encounter winds anywhere near 300 miles an hour, imagine what would occur.
Well, they took this into consideration. I guess time will tell on Friday, but I don't believe there's going to be any problem that they did. They spent most of the research money that they had on testing the system, and they tested it through a lot of different scenarios. And I don't believe that they're going to be kiboshed by a strong wind. They tested it for stronger winds than that they're going to than 300. So I don't see any problem. But time will tell on Friday, won't it?
Yes, sir, it will.
Anyway, I love
you. And again, I'm not reading anything into anything. I just read the story as it came across.
Well, that's fine. I'm just giving it.
And if you listen to the if you listen to the news on the hour, they're beginning to report on this now in the national news every hour.
Actually, can I talk about Mir? I've been listening
sure.
to Mir quite a bit.
Sure.
I'm a ham operator like yourself, and I've spoken with John Blaha and Jerry Lineger, and,
yep.
and I was hoping to import Mike Fole, but fortunately, situation, you can't do it. I think the situation up there is probably grimmer. And like your previous talk about Mir, I didn't think the situation was as bad as people were talking about, but this time I think it's worse.
Well, I tried to tell them for a long time that it was very serious. Nobody was listening.
Well, now I think it's much worse, and I'll tell you why. You heard that the power requirements on Mir were so low that they had to cut everything off, and they were working with flashlights.
Virtually, well, yes. Uh-huh.
Now, do you think that had this being the case, they would immediately shut off the amateur packet station?
I'm not sure where in the list of priorities packet would be.
Oh, it was shut off. It was the first thing
yeah.
shut off last time.
Yeah, yeah.
And this time it wasn't. They were working with flashlights, yet the packet station was on. And I thought about this, and I was thinking, why wouldn't they shut it off? I think it's because they couldn't get to it, personally. And I wonder just how bad it is in there. And I heard we've been listening to the downlink talking on the
143.625.
Yeah, and we heard Mike Fole actually when he was told that they were going to do an internal spacewalk, he freaked. I mean, he sounded really shocked that they would even suggest such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard that was a pal. I'm in southwestern British Columbia, and I heard that. I guess that was coming from. Los Angeles, where I can't remember where it is, but Southern California station, and I was quite shocked about that. And, when you don't usually hear emotion from these astronauts because they know people are listening.
That's correct.
Yeah.
I appreciate the call, sir. Thank you. Yes, I think the situation on Mir is very serious indeed. With regard to the dust storm on Mars, I don't know, folks. I'm just reporting it to you as I get it. I got it about 2 days ahead of the mainstream press, and people said I was crazy. Now it's in the mainstream press, and I'm hearing that there could be winds in the area of, if it builds, 300 miles an hour. I'm no expert, but I imagine this thing bouncing down onto the surface of Mars, and if there are winds in the area of 300 miles an hour, I would think it would just blow it along. Certainly, they're not going to open it up under those conditions, but it would blow along the surface or perhaps even become airborne, if you can say there is air there, and there is to some degree, and until it finally would come to rest in some sort of crevice or get caught somewhere. And as you know, and Richard explained, it is then open like a petal. Well, if it gets caught in a crevice, obviously it's not going to be opened, is it? So, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello. Goodbye. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Yes, I was sitting here listening and wondering, sure, back about late 80s. On Discovery Channel, they were discussing electromagnetic fields and supposedly how the Russians created pillars to change weather patterns.
Okay.
I was wondering how that, or if it played into anything that dealt with what we have been talking about in the last couple weeks.
You mean like our changing weather? I have absolutely no idea. I've heard a lot about efforts to modify or change the weather, but I wouldn't know. I'm just observing. For example, Reuters News. Let me read you this. The French and Italian-speaking parts of Switzerland, including the lakeside city of Geneva, has had 2 and 3 times the normal level of rain in June. Rain was much heavier than normal throughout the Alpine country in June, during which the sun only appeared 6 days. Flooding has damaged grain crops, including wheat, colza vineyards, fruit orchards, especially in the agricultural states of Vaud and Valais, according to Swiss newspapers. Average rainfall in June is 80 millimeters, but reached double that level around Lake Geneva and triple that level in other parts of that country. Hail the size of ping-pong balls on Sunday caused several million Swiss francs damage. So the weird weather continues around the world. Now, you can look at this any way you want, but I don't think you can deny that we are entering a very extremely strange pattern of weather. Here in the desert, it has been particularly unusual. But ours is not a different story. It's different and changed everywhere. I looked at the temperature yesterday around 2 or 3 in the afternoon. It was 81.9 degrees here. This is July, folks, and I live near Death Valley. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, good morning, Art.
Good morning.
Arnie of Fairbanks, Alaska.
Yes, sir.
Hey, regarding Mel's hole, when you initially interviewed Mel,
right,
you said that he had given you his phone number. In fact, you had contacted him at that number.
That is correct.
Could you give that number to the local authorities in the Ellensburg area?
I certainly could have. But I promised Mel that I would not do that. And, you know, a promise is a promise. Without his permission, you know, we encountered that. I had all the media calling me, right? And I could have given Mel's number out. But I made a promise not to do that without his permission. And so I did.
Well, since he's no longer to be seen or heard from, wouldn't it be kind of after the fact anyway? How could it hurt him?
Yes, it could hurt him, because if they had the phone number, they could at least find out who had that phone number then and identify him. And he didn't want to be identified.
Well,
so, I mean, it's like a promise is a promise. I, you know, a lot of times when you deal with people who've got strange or unusual stories, they don't want the exposure of the press rushing in. They don't want that. In fact, frankly, Mel came on my program with incredible hesitation, if you recall.
Well, at least he made it sound that way.
Yeah, and so I made a promise, and I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, I think it's somebody with the Ellensburg Chamber of Commerce. I think that's the best ruse that you could come up with to get the tourists up there.
Well, they had a lot of tourism.
Thank you, Art.
Take care.
Good night.
Good night. Look, when you're in my position, if you promise somebody that you will keep them anonymous, you better do it. Otherwise, they don't come to you again. And your word has got to be your bond. So sure, I had Mel's number, but give it out? Uh-uh. Not without his permission. And I did seek that. He said, no, look, I don't want to get involved. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
Okay.
You're calling from Chicago.
Yes, sir.
I had a question about the pyramids. Actually, a couple of questions. Do you think that it could possibly be, maybe like an ancient bomb shelter or something like that?
I would doubt that. That wouldn't be my first guess.
Okay. The other question, maybe you could ask Richard Hoagland this, is what is directly 180 degrees, on the other side of Earth underneath the pyramids?
The pyramids. All right. Well, Richard could answer that, I suppose. In other words, on the exact opposite side of the Earth. You know, I always thought it'd be cool if you could actually drill a hole through the Earth. Wouldn't that be neat? And have a trans-Earth subterranean vehicle of some sort that would take you to China or wherever. I wonder if anybody has ever contemplated such a thing. Just begin digging and keep digging. I am told the pressure would collapse the hole and it couldn't be done, and I suppose that's true, but it's an interesting concept, huh? The Earth, in circumference, is a very great distance, but if you could actually bore straight through it, well, you get the idea. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Going once, going twice, gone. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Art?
Okay.
This is the freak in the Midwest.
Yes, sir.
How you doing?
You already asked that.
I know. That's why I call myself the freak. Anyway, listen, I have a book from back in 86 put out by Brad Steiger.
Yes.
Called The True Psychic Inquirer.
Right.
Are you familiar with that?
Brad's a good friend.
Oh, really?
I don't know that particular book. He has written, like, about 140 books.
Right. Well, this is probably actually like a thing they put out on a periodical basis, whether it was every 3 months or bi-monthly or what. But anyway, there's a story in there called about America being founded on metaphysical soil. And there's a little excerpt in there that basically says that our founding fathers believed that the new order they were creating would one day be established over the whole earth. And they also believed the new age of Aquarius would begin around 5-5-2000, and a phoenix would rise from the ashes, and a new Egypt would be born.
Okay, well, that fits right in, of course, with what Richard Hoagland has been saying. Thank you. A new phoenix. Listen, I want to mention this. This is the last week that you're going to be able to get a signed copy, a first edition copy of my book, The Quickening. I'm going to let slip a little something. Soon it is going to be available in bookstores nationwide in hardcover form. I'm probably not supposed to say that. But two things are happening. One, the second edition is just about sold out. And number two, as of this Sunday, Dreamland, this Sunday, you will no longer be able to get an autographed edition of my book. So there's good news and bad news. The good news, you'll be able to get it in bookstores nationwide. Of course, you won't get a signed copy. If you want a signed copy, call right now, 1-800-864-7991. That's 1-800-864-7991. Sunday is the end of it all for a while. Take a listen to this. No, wait a minute. That isn't what I wanted you to hear. What am I doing? Doggone it. That is not what I wanted you to hear at all. I'll dig that out and do it after the break. So let me just go ahead and keep enlarging on what I'm saying. I had a significant discussion with my publisher yesterday. The industry people are clamoring to get the book, and it is going to be available shortly, as I just said, nationwide, in just about any major bookstore. We are on the edge of doing that. This is the final week. In other words, Sunday, I will stop signing copies of The Quickening and will not do it anymore. Ha ha ha. Until perhaps Christmas, and maybe not even then. So this may be it entirely. If you want a signed first edition copy of The Quickening, call now 1-800-864-7991. That's 1-800-864-7991. For those of you who have wanted to get a copy of The Highwayman, I'll tell you what, get out your recorders and get them ready, because I've got so many requests. I'm going to play it after the bottom of the hour. It's all about reincarnation. It's one of the prettiest songs that I think I've ever heard. Willie Nelson was one of them. It's called The Highwayman. It's about reincarnation. It's coming up after the break. This is CBC.
taking calls on the Wildcard Line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
There is a last night for everything. The last night for my autographed book, The Quickening, is going to be this coming Sunday. And by the way, there then will be a delay before it hits the bookstores. I'm not saying you won't be able to get copies. You won't be able to get signed copies. And there may be a dry period altogether. And then it's going to be massively distributed nationwide in August, probably late August or early September. So what I'm doing now, I'm doing for my listeners, all of you. Those of you who want copies, 1-800-864-7991. 1-800-864-7991. And by the way, the price is a bit better getting it direct than it's going to be in the stores. The GE Super 3, by the way, get your recorders ready. I promise the highwaymen are coming up. KRC, that's 888-GOLD-KRC. All right, Art, your quickening seems to be interplanetary. That is, we here on Earth are experiencing unusual and unseasonable weather. It seems that Mars is also experiencing unusual weather, with the dust storms that possibly jeopardize the Mars Pathfinder mission. Good call. What are the odds of the dust storm blowing the airbag-laden rover over to the Cydonia site? Rob in Pasadena. Interesting you should mention that, Rob. I have no idea. The odds of that would be fairly astronomical. All right, what I am about to play for you is a very unusual record as far as I'm concerned. It is Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, and Kris Kristofferson, and a very unlikely combination to sing about what I believe this song to be firmly about, and that is reincarnation. It's one of the prettiest songs I've ever heard, and here it is. It's called The Highwayman.
I was a highwayman, along the coach roads I did ride, sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The master hung me in the spring of 25, but I am still alive.
I was a sailor, I was born upon the tide, with the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner around the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft and furled the mainsail in a blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I'm living still. I was a dam builder across the river deep and wide, where steel and water did collide. A place called Boulder on the Wild Colorado. I slipped and fell into the wet concrete below. They buried me in that great tomb that knows no sound. But I'm still around. I'll always be around, around, around. I fly a starship across the universe divide, and when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can. Perhaps I
I may become a highwayman again. Or I may simply be a single drop of rain. But I will remain. And I'll be back again and again and again.
You may have noticed I paused both at the beginning and the end to give those of you who wanted to record the opportunity. So many people have been driving me crazy to play that song that I thought I would give you all a chance to record it and listen to, until your ears bleed, because that's what I do with music that I love. I tend to listen to it again and again and again, sounding like the record, until my ears bleed, metaphorically. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Mike from Santa Rosa, California.
Hi, Mike.
Thanks for playing The Highwayman. I just love that song.
I know. It's incredible.
But I was calling because, A, it looks like Richard may be proven right yet again.
Well, it's tiresome, isn't it?
Yeah, well.
In other words, I'm not saying that he will. It may come down on the 4th. It may be okay. Who knows? But, I mean, here comes something that was totally unexpected, that could either ruin or interfere with or delay the Mars mission. Now, they do have enough fuel on board, according to Richard, much more than they need, so that if something does happen, maybe there is a way they can delay it or shift the landing spot, or who knows.
Yeah, but the main reason that I called was earlier you spoke of something where, looking at Venus, because it's so bright, it sometimes will look like it's moving.
Well, when it's low in the atmosphere, you're looking through a great deal of atmosphere, you know, when it's close to the horizon.
Right.
And there's something that occurs with your eyes when you stare straight at it, and it begins to look like it moves up and down and sideways and all over the place.
Yeah, but one thing, that if you're looking at something in the sky, if you look when it's darker, you know, if you're looking near sunset, yeah, I can see that. But if you're looking where you have a background of stars to compare it against, because recently I went to an observatory to look at Hale Bopp, one of the last looks at it that
right.
we had
right.
here, and looking out on the horizon, you know, we were standing talking, waiting in line to get into this observatory, look through this 40-inch telescope at Hale Bopp, and we were looking out way off in the horizon, pretty low, but way far out.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw this background of three stars moving very, very, very slowly mm-hmm. against the background. And you could see that it was moving against the background, but the three stars were in relation to one another, moving together, but changing against everything else.
Well, I have no answer for that. I wouldn't know. I just know that there is a trick that is played on your eye with respect to Venus in particular, as bright as it is, even with respect to the other stars. When you concentrate and look just at Venus, it appears to be moving, even though the adjacent stars are not.
Right. It's just I'm just saying leave it open because, you know, if you're talking about more than one thing,
yeah, it's
you
open.
Have the background stars to compare it against.
As far as I'm concerned, everything is open. Thank you. I'm just saying that there is a trick your eyes play. On my international line, you are on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art. How you doing? This is Jim up in Vancouver.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the reverse speech.
Oh, okay. What about it?
Well, anyway, that program's really intriguing. Me and my girlfriend really like it. And we have a little four-track recorder here at the house. And the other night, what we did after hearing the program was we had a little kind of a relationship clearing, you know, with the four-track.
Yes.
We taped it, okay? And then played it backwards. And we actually got some quite interesting things. Like my girlfriend asked me, for instance, what do you love about me? You know, and I told her all the things I love about her. And then we played it backwards, and a lot of other things came out of things that I love about her that I didn't say forward.
You didn't say anything like, except for your big teeth and your crooked nose?
Nothing like that. It was totally congruent with what I was saying. But it was still true. It's like, you know, I just...
Yeah, but imagine if it hadn't been.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I was, like, totally scared to do it. You know, when she's asking me these questions. And she's like, well, now tell me what you would change about me. But it was really cool because, you know, after I told her...
And what did you say in reverse in answer to that?
In answer to that, I said, let me think. There's
nothing, darling. You're absolutely perfect, just the way you are.
Well, in forward, I just said, well, you get mad at me too much sometimes. But in reverse, it just it said things like, I really love you. I value you. And I appreciate you. And I really love your symbolism. Just all kinds of really cool stuff. And I just want to say that, yeah, the reverse speech is awesome.
It is. I appreciate your call. Thank you. It could also potentially be extremely dangerous, however. So I do not recommend that you try at home what he just described. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, hi, Art.
Hello.
It's a dubious honor talking to you.
It's who?
My name's Bill.
Yes, Bill.
Okay. I happen to own land real close to where Mills Hole supposedly is.
Yes.
And, it is very unique, but that you saw the thing they did on Strange Universe, right?
I was part of it.
I know you were part of it, but you saw...
Yes,
the
I saw.
...the white trailer there?
Yes.
That's supposedly empty and nobody... Isn't it whatever?
Yes.
Abandoned?
Yes, yes.
Well, the reason why it's abandoned is because that guy started a fire there.
Really?
Yeah, well, I live there, so I know.
So that guy is you?
No, unfortunately. There's a big story behind that, but
nice.
At any rate. Yeah, there is supposedly a hole there, and that antenna stack isn't too far from where it's at. So it's very interesting.
Well, I don't know what to say. It is what it is. I made my promises. Thank you to Mel. And look, when you're in my business, if you don't keep your promises regarding information you receive, then pretty soon nobody comes to you with any more information. So you've got to keep your promises. I try to do that. And I have to do that. There's no other way. A lot of times it is inconvenient, but identifying Mel would have been a terrible breach of my professional ethics, such as they are or you imagine them to be. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, what's up? I think I know what that bismuth stuff is.
Bismuth magnesium, actually.
Yeah. Is it in a frame?
I beg your pardon?
Is it incorporated in a frame of some kind?
No.
Well, anyway, I think I know what it is.
What?
If it's really from the early 50s or 40s or late 40s or whatever.
Yes.
It's consistent with a combination instrument. It's part magnetometer, part sail switch. It would go in the bottom of one of the chambers of a collidometer. And it would be consistent with their description of it being a airborne sensor. A collidometer is just a bunch of chambers of various sizes. Particles go through them, make a 90-degree turn,
and they fall out. The problem with this is... that every rare metals manufacturer we've gone to, just about every good one in the U.S.
Well, I believe it was made by, I don't think I'll say it over the air, but I think I know who made it. So
send me the information.
Well, there's no way I could. I don't do faxes and stuff.
You don't do faxes? Don't you write letters?
Yeah, I could. I'd have to listen for your address later. But anyway, how many layers? There's 20 or something? It sounds like some, okay, this method changes its resistivity with magnetic flux. So, are you there?
I'm listening.
So it's probably part of a sail switch.
You already said that.
That would orient itself, and then bismuth itself does not become radioactive. So if they were looking for, trace radioisotopes, stuff like that, they would end up in the collidometer, which is just a bunch of lightweight chambers, and then this thing would be part guidance, part... sail switch and part instrument incorporated in a collidometer.
All right. Well, I appreciate your call, sir, but that's just a big guess. And we have had scientists at Los Alamos, Sandia Labs, every rare metals manufacturer that we've been able to tap on the shoulder. scientists of nearly every stripe, labs that have tried to duplicate it, and these are the most powerful people in their fields in the country, and they don't have the slightest idea what it is, nor have they been able to duplicate it. So it may be as you suggest, but we've got a number of reports, including one that we paid for that was done at Carnegie in Washington. And Art's parts remain anomalous, unexplained, inexplicable, and presently very arduous testing is going on with regard to apparent or thought to be anti-gravitic properties. And they are looking for a mass or weight reduction, and it's very delicate trying to get the proper voltage attached to this material. That's really all I can tell you right now. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I was wanting to comment about the dust storm on Mars.
Yes.
You're mentioning the speeds could be up to 300 miles an hour. You take into account.
Well, what I said was Richard Hoagland just called me last hour and said speeds in those storms can reach 300 miles per hour. Yes.
It's possible. One thing that he failed to mention is the Martian atmosphere density is 1/100th that of the Earth. Therefore, that wind speed would equal about 30 miles an hour, 30-mile-an-hour wind on the Earth. And the lander can easily sustain that. And the airbags are going to automatically deflate in 11 minutes, so it's not going to go rolling around the whole Martian landscape for an eternity. And another thing was about this...
Why then do you think they would write stories now, breaking all over the mainstream press, suggesting that the dust storm may menace the Mars probe landing site?
Well, I'll bet Richard Hoagland $1 million it will land on the 4th of July. There's no way it's not going to land on the 4th. It will either crash or will land on the 4th. There's no way it can be delayed into the 20th, and there's no way it will go to Cydonia. A couple of reasons is the Pathfinder is a solar-powered spacecraft along with a rover, and you need to be at this latitude where the landing site is designated in Aries Valence to get proper solar illumination for your power source. If you go to Cydonia, you're getting way cut down on your solar requirements. And the spacecraft is, there's no way, it's not going into orbit, so it's going dead into Mars.
No, that's true. It's not, it's like a rifle shot.
Exactly. So it's going dead into Mars, and on the 4th of July, this Friday, it's either going to crash and form a new crater on Mars, or it's going to land. And there's no way I'd be willing to take them up on a wager. Anything he wants to bet, it's not going to land on the 20th of July. It's going to land on the 4th.
No, you may be right.
If anybody has any doubts, check out the Pathfinder webpage. We've got a frequently asked questions section on there. It answers a lot of questions, and, you know, I think that...
What does it say on the frequently asked questions section about all the fuel they took?
I don't know what the poundage, what the propellant is in the cruise stage, but the cruise stage is going to separate 9:32 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time Friday morning.
No, I meant the amount of fuel, sir.
I don't know what the poundage is in propellant there.
About 600 pounds, and that's much more than they need to accomplish what they're doing. I was just wondering what they said about
it. Well, I know that you know, NASA engineers are so conservative, they always overestimate. They've done 4 TCM burns, which are trajectory course maneuvers.
Sure.
And there may be a possibility for doing one more, a fifth burn, about 12 hours before landing. And so I don't know what, I couldn't tell you what propellant challenges right now in it, but like I said, it's going to land on the 4th or it's going to crash. There's no doubt about that.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that may be absolutely correct. And right now, it certainly appears as though that is going to be correct. But I think that this dust storm they're talking about is still a vast unknown. And according to all the press reports I'm reading, it is menacing the landing site. Now, what does that mean to you, that word menacing? Possibly interfering with, affecting, menacing. That's a fairly clear word. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good morning. I'm from Albany, New York.
Yes, sir.
It's amazing how many people you have to describe what it means to keep a promise to as far as Mel's Halls go. You know, it's absolutely amazing. As far as Highwayman goes, my daughter loves to go to your webpage and sit there and sing the lyrics to Highwayman for hours.
I know.
She just goes up there and she sings that song. It's fantastic.
It is beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, thanks for a fantastic show once again, Art.
You bet. And we've got a lot of good ones coming up this week. It's going to be a very interesting week. Listen.
Oh, it's continued to be great.
Listen, you get the honors all the way from Albany, New York. You know what to do.
As the next Phoenix resident, I would love the honors from Albany, New York, in the high desert. Good night, America.
That's it, folks. That's all the time we've got. It has been, indeed, a very, very interesting night. In an interesting week, in what is going to be a fascinating month. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. Good night. Let me...